growth requires more than capital.
Why do we call it the cheat code? Nobody said growth had to be fair.
Revenue solves everything.
Welcome to the cheat code. What was our fastest path to revenue?
We tend to like to do things the hard way.
What's the cheat code? It's giving yourself an unfair advantage over the others.
What is it that really works, and how are we going to grow these organizations?
That's our cheat code.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of our beloved Cheat Code, joined here today by the illustrious, a member of Women in Partnerships, a co-host to a podcast near and dear to all of our hearts, Friends with Benefits, which is probably still the best podcast title in history, and also a brand new transition to announce, Chief Growth Officer, Salesforce for Advisory. Welcome, Sam Yarborough, to the show.
Man, thank you. So thrilled to be here. Excited to chat with you guys.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining. It's without belaboring too much background, like we really need to scramble, and Sam was on our guest list, but like literally like a number of folks decided to cancel on us this week. So she is like coming out with very little runway, and we very much appreciate it. Sam, I know it's going to be a great episode because I think you know, the specific focus of your role is also kind of, it's certainly been kind of the bane of my existence in the past. And I know Sean's got some challenges as well, which is like, how do you form, you know, partnerships with really large ecosystems that are already well established that, you know, very much have a way of doing things. I was actually talking to one of our portcos Friday and, you know, they were mentioning, oh, it's great. They've got this, you know, they're speaking with a very large player in their space, which is kind of not in ours in B2B tech, but, you know, they've got this partner process that they, you know, it's just down. They've showed us all these timelines and, you know, the folks who are going to be involved. And I was like, yeah, what we're going to try and do is the opposite of everything that they kind of want to do as part of that formulaic process. So I think your cheat code is spot on for managing those questions and a lot of others, but as we were chatting before the show, you mentioned like your cheat code really is doing just that, is, you know, forming meaningful partnerships with, you know, meaningful players within the space, like what we would largely refer to as strategic partners. So give us a little, you know, info around that, some background, like kind of the notions of commitment and things like that you mentioned, because I think it's just incredibly relevant.
Yeah. So I think a lot of people approach these large ecosystems and they, you know, specifically in Salesforce or even Azure, AWS, you get on the marketplace, the AppExchange, and you expect leads to start flowing and revenue to fall from the sky. And that is not how it happens. and I think if you remove all of the infrastructure and the hype around these marketplaces, at the end of the day, it's still people doing business with people. And partner leaders and managers go into these ecosystems and they try to boil the ocean. And I think what we forget is it starts one-to-one. And it starts by building these one-to-one relationships. It starts by asking for referrals, by building that network. And before you know it, it will snowball and you will be able to, quote unquote, boil the ocean within these ecosystems. But you have to start small. You have to commit to showing up often and frequently with these ecosystems.
Is that commitment, like the question that we always get is, you know, like, what is my, if we're not speaking to the CEO, like what's my CEO's role within this? You know, like, do they have to be bought in? Does that initial engagement have to come through them? I'm curious, you know what I mean? With that, you know, people-centric approach and the fact that like so many businesses, decisions like this do happen at the top, right? Like, is that critical? Like, does that have to be like singular that, hey, you know, this is going to come as a top-down strategy?
That's a really good question. And we talk about this all the time with our customers who are partners. Like, having an executive buy-in is crucial and absolutely needed. That's the difference between a company being partner curious and partner led. And two reasons why I think that's really important. One, you have to have a founder, a CEO who's invested in the process and understands that what I just talked about, you join the AppExchange and leads start flowing, doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. This takes time, right, and commitment. And there are leading indicators to show success. But just like sales would have to do, just like marketing would have to do, you have to build a pipeline. You have to build awareness. And so having a C-suite that understands that and can help support those motions is crucial.
Yeah, I see. I mean, I see a lot of times the CEO will come and say, we need this logo, right? We want this logo as a partner. Just like they want this big logo as an enterprise sale, right? And then you task someone to do it and they kind of step back a little bit and they expect, you know, a month from then, 2 months from then to have some level of expectations of ROI or where are you at now? And the, honestly, it takes a couple months just to get on the radar and get it through this program. And the more sophisticated the program is, the harder it is to even get to those basic levels. And so I think I see a lot of people get disheartened because they're not good at managing expectations up and there's too high of expectations going into it from what's actually realistic.
Yeah, couldn't say it better myself. And those are the types of things like even so at Invisory, we consult partners on how to be successful in marketplaces. And, you know, we bring on new customers and we ask, what's your goal here? Why are you partnering with Azure, Salesforce, what have you? The answer is always, always close one revenue. Okay, yeah, that's why we're all in partnerships. But what are you going to do to get there? And those are the metrics that you should be showcasing to your C-suite and measuring against in the first 6 months, a year, so that you can say, here's how we're going to get to close one revenue. Here's how we're building that pipeline. And to your point, I think a lot of people forego that step and set themselves up for failure.
Yeah, even beyond, you know, the desired KPI, or similarly around like that, have you really thought this out concept? Like, I find that so few organizations have what I call a holistic value proposition for a partnership as well. Mm-hmm. Like one that's customer facing, one that's, you know, internal to their business, and then also one that, you know, makes sense for the different roles and touch points within that organization. Because really you need all of those. Like the what's in it for me aspect, I think is super critical. So I would assume, well, I don't want to assume, but like, do you find a similar, like, do you have to lead people kind of through those processes of understanding, like, why do we want to do this just as much as the what do we want to get out of it?
Absolutely. And I would even add to them, like, and how? Like, so to your point, you need buy-in from all of your internal teams. You need alignment with marketing. So how are your partnerships affecting your customers, your prospecting? You know, I've sat in seats where that's the job of like building the internal partnerships first of like, how am I going to align with sales? Whereas the sales leader is like, I don't have time for you to enable my team. We're too busy. Mm-hmm. Like getting over those hurdles and making sure that partnerships holistically is going to market as a company is huge. And you have to have, that's where the C-suite buy-in comes in. Because if it's a lowly partner manager being like, dear sales leader, please pay attention to me, they're set up for failure. But if it's a top-down approach, it's like partnerships is how we're going to get to market faster, bigger, and better. Get this person on your sales team call.
For sure. Sam, I know you came into PFL. I know that you were there for a few years. And correct me if I'm wrong, you guys did not have a very sophisticated relationship at Salesforce at the time. And then you built that out. What was that? Like, when did you know, like, okay, this is working? Like, when was that kind of the corner that you turned? You're like, okay, I think this might actually be something that will generate revenue, maybe not at that moment.
Yeah, so we did have a relationship with Salesforce. It had certainly, it was in a trough when I picked it up. No, to my point earlier, nobody had committed to it in a few years. So we basically had to like revive it. How I knew that it was going to be something that was working was boots on the ground. I built a lot of relationships with individual AEs in particular industries we were focused on. One financial service AE invited me to do basically like a lunch and learn, but it was with her entire patch of customers. So she invited 17 of her financial service customers and I got to pitch 17 companies at one time. And I brought this to my CEO at the time. And he was like, do you know how long it would take our BDRs to get 17 meetings? And I was like, yeah, I probably longer than it took me to get one. And that's when we made the case. It's like, if you gave me our partnerships, somebody to go do nothing but become a household name inside of Salesforce, imagine the scale that we could produce as a result. And so we did. We hired Alex Dayton. He came over from the BDR team, and I think that's a huge hire for a partnerships person because they are hunter and they are hungry. And in those large ecosystems, I mean, there's 10,000 Salesforce sellers. So you need somebody that has a number and is ready to just go get it. And it changed the game. I mean, by the time we were done, we sourced 65% of revenue, closed one revenue through the Salesforce ecosystem.
It's amazing.
Oh, it's incredible. Why do you think so many people get this wrong? Because I think something that you just mentioned right there is hypercritical, meaning that like you kind of ran a proof of concept. And, you know, Josh, who's not on this episode, but like literally like beats this into the heads of folks in our portcos. It's like, you have to go out and just start doing this, mm-hmm. like forging some of those relationships, getting some initial traction with, you know, either joint prospects or referrals and so on. And then you have to like prove this concept, getting back to the, what if my CEO is not on board, or maybe, what if this isn't a strategic initiative for this year? And, you know, like, I hear that theme pop up over and over again of someone that just kind of took the initiative. It went out and like showed, to your point, the returns that you can get on, you know, some really in the weeds partner effort that has really tangible results that in order to quote unquote scale and accomplish through kind of like the, you know, last 15 years of B2B playbook would take an enormous amount of investment and headcount and just general inefficiency. But I feel like we've had like, so many of these examples pop up. Like, what are the big barriers that you think are still yet to fall for the market to really say, this is an enormous growth channel?
I think there's a lot to unpack there. First, I think just sticking your toe in to test these ecosystems is not going to be successful. A lot has to happen in order for these partnerships to be successful. And I think people are nervous to give that initial investment of time and commitment to see if it truly will work. Mm-hmm. So, for example, in Salesforce specifically, they have their own language. And if you walk into the Salesforce ecosystem with like what's on your website, it's not going to land. It's how does this change the game for you as a Salesforce seller? How does this fit in with what you're selling, what your customers are asking for? So you have to be able to articulate your language correctly. So there's that. That's a marketing aspect. Mm-hmm. And then, again, there's 10,000 sellers. There's 5,000 ISVs. So you do the math. It's noisy. So if you don't keep showing up with a consistent, relevant message, you're going to be forgotten. And you're never going to be able to showcase that proof of concept. So to your question, I'm not saying only go test this with Salesforce, but I'm saying don't go test this with every partner. Like, I hear these people that are like, I have 250 partners. It's like, are you doing anything with them? Like, how is that even possible? Start small, get your message right, stay consistent, and that's how you're going to prove dividends.
Makes a lot of sense.
The relevance part's really difficult though, because if you think about it on just rep turnover internally with your partner, you have 10,000 reps, 30% of them are getting promoted or they're going to change jobs, right? So every year you're getting a new whole fresh batch in there. And so I think what's hard about it is, and to your point on consistency, it's you got to do it, and you got to do it the next quarter, and you got to do the same thing again the next quarter in order to stay relevant with those people that are there, let alone educate new folks. And that takes it takes a lot of dedication, but also have a programmatic approach to the whole thing, right? Like, you have to have a framework for how to interact with these.
Okay, so now we're speaking my love language, because this is where I get really excited. I couldn't agree more. And the other challenging part about like Salesforce is they don't have cross Beamer reveal. So this account mapping is really manual. Right. Whereas, like, you know, the hyperscalers, they're transactable, and so that, and there's like a whole co-sell motion, which is very different, and that's great. With Salesforce, you have to track these relationships. So, Sean, to your point, I think if somebody gets promoted and or gets a new account list, which, by the way, happens every February, it's a nightmare, but that's an awesome opportunity for you to be tracking this stuff and reach out in February and say, hey, last year we sold these three counts together. Who's new in your book of business? Who does it make sense to introduce me into? So you should be using that to your advantage. So like we actually built something, Invisory has something on the AppExchange that's very, very similar, but it's a tracking mechanism for exactly that. Because that's the other thing. I was doing this on sticky notes and that gets complicated real fast. So tracking this in your CRM, and then that true brings your sales team on board. It brings your CS team on board. But yeah, you can't wing it because it's way too much data to remember.
Yeah, I mean, it's an entire inside sales process just prospecting into a single organization.
Well, and that's how we approach it too. Like we look at our Salesforce AEs as our prospects. So there's a whole funnel for them. There's a whole sales process to get an intro. Like it's a pipeline, just like a sales process would have.
Before we get too deep into this, I'm wondering if we want to zoom up for a minute. I'm just curious personally for you, like what initially opened your eyes to like the power of partnerships and, you know, something that you actually wanted to, you know, design a career around really?
That's a great question. Ask me 3 years ago, would I be in the seat that I'm in now? No. To be totally frank, when I took over the Salesforce partnership, I was like, God dang it. Like, this is going to be awful. I was not looking forward to
it. No one would ever have that response to a Salesforce.
A lot of people call me though. They're like, I'm taking it over. I'm like, I was there too. It doesn't have to be terrible. But I think, you know, this is kind of a lame answer, but it is true. Just like any relationship, the more you put into it, the more you get out of it. And so Salesforce was the one that was driving the most for us. It wasn't a lot, but it was something at the time. And to your point of proving this out, it was like, well, let's commit there for a minute. Let's see what would happen if we really like nailed our messaging. We stayed consistent with these sellers and it snowballed. And, you know, I saw success with it. And there is a method to the madness. And now I get to help other people find it. And I actually do get a lot of joy out of it, surprisingly enough.
In terms of that runway, like when you're advertising, because I think we've all said in different formats, even on this episode, but like these things take time. Mm-hmm. Like when clients are approaching you guys and they're asking, you know, kind of for the secret sauce here, and then they're wondering how much commitment do we need? You know, how much budget, like obviously not in terms of specifics here, but like, how do you set those expectations?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it comes back to a few factors of, do you have executive buy-in first? Do you have somebody that's actually—
If you don't, are you telling them like that has to be the first domino to fall? It's kind of to the point earlier.
It's really helpful. If you don't, then let's make a case to get you there as soon as possible, because mm-hmm. otherwise it's going to be an uphill battle. And we're going to be spinning our wheels on things that should just come naturally, like getting on sales calls or being involved in marketing.
Right.
And then do you have somebody who's going to execute on this? So, you know, these partnerships can't exist on like a highly strategic level. We can't just throw all these people into nurture campaigns and expect them to convert. We need to have somebody right. that's boots on the ground, building relationships, you know, connecting with solution engineers, AEs, going to events. So that's kind of a precursor for sure. And then, you know, I think there's a lot of avenues in which to enter these ecosystems. So for Salesforce, the AppExchange, are you getting leads from there? If not, let's fix that immediately. Do you have an SI network? If not, let's start, you know, looking at who the right SIs you should be partnering with are. And then ultimately Salesforce AEs and SEs. So there's a lot of venues in which revenue can start to flow. Let's prioritize and then go after it. But I would say 6 months, we should start to see some revenue. And let me refer 6 months after listing. So you are active.
Got it.
It's a key differentiator.
Yes.
So you mentioned that, you know, like I do think most of these partner programs have a catalyst that is, you know, sometimes it absolutely is the CEO, but like kind of that, like we talk about founding AEs, right? Like that founding, you know, partnerships individual. I hate to even use a lot of the titles that are out there for them, but I was listening to Jared Fuller kind of give his spiel. He just launched a book a couple of weeks ago, and like his take on like the DNA of that kind of founding partnerships leader, mm-hmm. In terms of entrepreneurship and having an entrepreneurial mind and so on. And I'm curious at your reaction to that.
I think that's absolutely true. Jason and I talk about this all the time of like a partner person, a good one, wears every hat in the business. And mm-hmm. every hat in the business and outside of the business. Because every person we're talking to, we're making a pitch. So if you're talking to CS, here's right. why you should give me your time. Here's what's in it for you. Same with sales. Same with product. Same with marketing. Then you go externally. Partners, here's what's in it for me. Here's what's in it for you. And then you have to get boots on the ground and you have to use your marketing hat. You have to negotiate. So absolutely, it's an entrepreneurial role. There is nobody else to do it for you. And so to going back to your point of like this proof of concept, it's you first. It's absolutely right. you first. So if you're expecting to walk into a partner program and like sit on your mighty throne and not get anything done, it's going to fail.
Who are those people?
Yeah, I think that's just such a critical mindset. You know what I mean? Like that. And it really runs inverse to, I think, what has been the hiring strategy and the makeup for a lot of folks within those roles in the past. So I think I'm kind of answering my own question in terms of like, why are folks not succeeding at this on a greater scale? And I think that's a lot of it right there, is just finding the right individual to culturally build out these teams.
And it's a hard hire.
Yeah, I think sometimes, or more often than not, I see the success coming from someone inside the business who mm-hmm. might have been just, you know, your utility player or was a sales leader or someone who is early there who understands the whole scope of the business and intimately enough to go speak for it, because you have to deal with so much autonomy being that first person that you really don't have much direction or framework or anything from that matter. You just got to go figure it out.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and I think... You have to be the best pitch person on your team. You have to be able to demo on a moment's notice. You have to, mm-hmm. like, you, it's you. And so I do think somebody from internal is a great hire, because if you have to come in and build without boundaries, have a total autonomous role, build a partner program, and learn the business itself, like, that's a long yeah. ramp time.
Right.
Big time. Yeah.
Sean, I thought you were just giving your like past job description there for a while.
I mean, that's why I was like, yep, I know exactly what we're talking about here. And I like you were describing it, so I'm just going to go on that train. But no, I mean, I've tried to hire for that person, and it's really difficult to do. And mm-hmm. I've been that person at an organization who came in without having been there before, and understand how difficult that is without being able to take people from other parts of the business immediately and bring them into your group, because they're the ones that have all the knowledge. It's like, I took someone from marketing, someone from sales, and put them in there so that you can go figure this out, or else you're kind of screwed. You're just kind of sitting there reporting up to the CEO, trying to deliver on numbers without having any idea how the business functions.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's why I think it is really important and something that's often overlooked. But if you are new to an organization, your first job should be to build friends internally, 100%, because that's going to be your fastest way to ramp. There are people who can help you, and so get to know them fast.
It's another cheat code.
Right. You mentioned with like the PFL story, I mean, in terms of like resurrecting, you know, kind of a flatline partnership and then transforming, I think you said 65% of revenues were ultimately attributed to that partnership. Is that the biggest win that you've personally had in terms of like creating and driving partnership programs, or are there other just kind of big windfalls that you've seen come from this?
So obviously closed won revenue is what everybody wants to look for. That's what keeps businesses alive. So that was a good
one. Sure.
But I will say an unexpected one was, so PFL is a horizontal partner, meaning we service all industries. I've since learned that even if you are a horizontal partner, verticalizing your messaging and your networking is highly effective.
Totally.
So
everyone wants to know, like, what industries do you serve, right?
Like, is there, all of
again,
them.
They're aligning that with their own language. Yeah, right?
Yeah.
It's a terrible answer.
Yeah. So as a result of our partnership, I started to get brought into a lot of like healthcare conversations, which was never a big focus for us. And PFL did gifting. They do high volume mail. They do everything for everyone. but as a result, we started getting brought into these like healthcare conversations, even like financial services and or like utility billing kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And in partnership with marketing, we shifted our ICP a little bit to meet the demands of our partnership, which was a fascinating project. And that all came and started as a result of the leads we were getting and the conversations we were having with Salesforce teams and customers. So that was an interesting byproduct that I was thrilled to be along because it was a learning curve for sure.
Right. Yeah, no, I've experienced that as well. Like our biggest industries at LeadMD for, you know, the first 8 years were what Marketo's largest industries were.
Yep.
And so you find those concentrations and you figure out like, why is that? And that becomes a pretty successful, you know, internal message, especially we found for like new AEs or new CSMs, right? Like they're taking over maybe a vertical focus patch. Like, here's what your customers are really using this tool to do and what they're really getting out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And here's, you know, either where they get stuck or like here's things to look for. If they're not doing this, they could see a big windfall from you know, that tactic or that strategy. And that became a real part of like kind of our overall health check methodology. Like, what industry are you in? And, you know, how should those configurations look? And what should you be doing on a month over month basis?
For sure. And I think that goes back to the language that we started with, like within healthcare, what does that mean for your customers? Like, I learned this the hard way. I've told the story. I went to a healthcare conference. You guys, I have a graphic design degree. Like, I don't know the first thing about healthcare. So I'm in this room with a bunch of these are leaders of hospitals, physicians even. And they're like, what do you do? And I'm like, we automate direct mail. And they're like, what? And I'm like, what do you mean, what? How can I explain that more clearly? Like, duh, direct mail. And then I learned, it was like, we started talking to these people and they're like, well, we have patients who would never use the internet. And I'm like, that's it. We can reach your patients who will never reach the, or get on the internet. And it's being able to articulate your use case within those industries very clearly, because otherwise it doesn't land.
1,000%. 1,000%. Yeah, I mean, just adopting that vocabulary is so critical.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably a good time to pivot into horror stories now. So I'm curious, you know, we've talked a lot about when everything goes right. I'm curious, well, what you've seen that's interesting in the realm of wrong.
Oh boy, where to start? Well, I'm going to go back to internal partnerships and starting there. So we got to the point where enabling my entire sales team just wasn't working. And I think that's a pretty common, lots of people are talking about enablement. Jesse Shipman's out there, you know, beating the drum. So what we did was we built a pod, essentially. So we had a Salesforce.
Meaning that these teams had become so expansive that it just wasn't, you know, no longer effective to do so, kind of all at once type approach? Or like, what were the symptoms there?
Either that and or to our point about like verticalizing industries, we were selling everything to everybody. And so the AEs, when they would get on the phone with like a Salesforce AE, they wouldn't, it just wasn't landing because they weren't speaking their language. They didn't understand the vertical use cases, etc. So to prove this out, I said, I want an AE to get all of my leads and let's focus on them and like just blow this up. And it worked. But the reason I did that was because we got on a lot of these calls with Salesforce AEs and it just was like a total bomb. Like, I was doing everything I could to like and here's what the deal does, and here's why you should care, and, you know, like playing Vanna White and failing miserably. And once we started with this one AE and all the other AEs saw like, oh, wait, he's closing really big deals and doing it really quickly. And then we finally got their attention. And when I started to enable them again, they finally started to pay attention. And that's really hard from a partnership perspective, because if you get an AE to give you an intro and you get on the phone and your team bombs it, that's your partnership on the line. And that hurts. Yep. So we had to learn that the hard way a few times and then figure out a way around it. So,
yeah, I love the, and by the way, I think this is like one of the most underutilized aspects in partnerships, which is in terms of like internally marketing those wins and like told through like an AE's perspective or a CSM's, whoever it might be, right? Like, hey, we helped so-and-so close X, Y, and Z last month. Here's the nuances of it. Here's why they won. Deal sizes. Like I see so few organizations just doing that. And they, I mean, it can take the form of like a lame newsletter. It can be video based. You can get really creative with it on the other end of the spectrum. But like just starting to do that, it just seems like everyone's mind kind of shuts off at the point of acquisition. Like, all right, we won that. Now we're going, you know, back around again, which of course you have to do. But like, there's such value in telling those stories.
Well, absolutely. And what then in turn happened was the sales leader said, okay, wait, you're getting great leads. We need to round robin these. And all of a sudden I have leverage to say, okay, well, if you want that to happen, here's what I need to happen. So there's another way to build internal partnerships, just a little more aggressive.
So I am curious, like, how do you guys, you know, keeping, you know, in terms of the focus?
No, I say foundationally, it's all the same. You know the right message, what's in it for who you're talking to. And as we've discussed, that's going to be different person to person, internally, externally, C-suite, et cetera. And then as we started the conversation, I think having leading indicators notated is so crucial. So you enter a marketplace, you know, start with Salesforce. Let's say on the first quarter, you need to meet 35 Salesforce sellers. That's a leading indicator. That's how you're going to drive towards revenue. So articulating your goals, having a clear message, and then an execution plan. And that's partnerships in a nutshell. It's just putting a new lens on it, depending on where you're going and who you're speaking to.
I'm curious, Sean, like, do you find the same thing like on the product side of the house, like the more integration driven partnerships? Like, does this playbook just work, you know, ubiquitously across these kind of different partnership lines?
Yes and no. There's a whole nother framework that comes before that, whether you're the person doing the integrating or someone's integrating into your platform, because a lot of it's creating the business case for them to take some of their engineering team and build something into your system, or to build something to connect those two systems, which in itself is like a whole nother process, which is, you know, we got to convince each other's executive teams this is worth us stopping some sort of customer request or some priority roadmap item in order to deliver here. And so, yes, in that same vein, but the objectives are a little bit different. Then once you get there, then all that other things comes into play. But really, you're trying to sell exec team to exec team at first, to order to, just to get the resources needed in. You know, at Salesloft, we became the platform that people built into. So we didn't do any of the integrations. We just maintained the APIs and the robustness of that for them to connect into. So what I spent, and my team spent a lot of our time, was helping develop a business case for our potential partners to present to their executive teams, to then allow them to have the bandwidth needed to go integrate. And we would do so by incorporating things like, we'll do co-marketing with you. We'll let you do a guest blog on our site. We'll give you a discount to sponsorship. We'll put you on stage. All sorts of different levers that we could pull in order to get that to happen.
I love that. And I'm assuming you also could include like a TAM in that. And
We did customer overlap using Crossbeam and all that stuff.
Yeah. Which I think is fantastic, because I love that you brought up this point. Like, a lot of people are like, well, should I enter a marketplace? I don't know. Is it worth my time? How do I choose which marketplace to go into? And as we just discussed, those are big decisions. Like, those are not things that you can make on a whim. And so understanding all of that, building that executive to executive. Granted, at Salesforce, that's going to be harder than
right
to ISVs or tech partners, but understanding the TAM, being able to make a business case. And this is where that like entrepreneurial person comes in handy too, because
totally,
you know, we say this all the time, but facts, not feelings. Partnerships have got to move away from feelings. Like, I feel like this would be a great thing for our business. Well, what's the TAM? How long is it going to take to get to revenue? What's the investment? All of those things that typically aren't talked about need to be front of mind.
Can we even work together with these folks? Because a lot of times people just look at the logo and that's not at all what is indicative of a successful partnership.
No, absolutely not.
So as we kind of round things out here, you know, we kind of talked about present, past. I'm curious, like we've talked about a bit of technology, which I feel like, of course, has been the precursor for this like revitalized focus on partnerships. I don't think there's been this much focus on partnerships that I can remember, you know, in modern history. I'm curious though, Sam, where do you think things are headed? Like what's the next big domino maybe that you think needs to fall in truly like making partnerships ubiquitous in terms of success and you know, an understanding of how they should look?
How much time do we have now?
We need hot takes.
Yeah. Well, first of all, it needs to become a part of every go-to-market motion. Like it needs to stop being an afterthought. And in order for that to happen, there needs to be leaders out there who are building executive buy-in and then screaming from the rooftops, this is what can happen when you really partner well with partners. And then I'm going to go back to it, but facts, not feelings. Like, what are you going to do? What's your business plan? And how are you going to get there quickly? Because there is no like shit, you go and there's sales trainings all over the place, but these partners, people are making it up on their own and it shouldn't be that way. Like there is a system, there is a process. And so the more we can formalize that and just get that into companies' hands so we're not just fumbling in the dark, the better. But man, it can change your business if you do it right.
I mean, not only change it, but I mean, there's notable businesses built around partnerships, right? Mm-hmm. So like 1,000% agree. So I know we mentioned the podcast as we popped into the episode, but like where else can people go to, you know, check out what you've got going on? What else do you have going on? We'd love to talk about women in partnerships because I don't personally know much about that channel as of yet. But yeah, just kind of, you know, where can people go to find out more?
Yeah, so my husband and I have a podcast. As you mentioned, he's also in partnerships and we were having these conversations all the time. So we figured we should just hit record. So that's been really fun. I'm trying to be more and more active on LinkedIn, but that's difficult with a full-time job and being a mom of two. And then Women in Partnership.
And how old are your kids?
2 and 4.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're in the same boat. I've got 3 and 6 or 4 and 6.
Yeah. So you get it. The free time is not a thing. But yeah, Women in Partnerships is a subset of partner leaders. And it's just a group of women in partnerships.
In partnerships.
Yep. It's pretty self-explanatory, but it's a great group of people. Love talking to them just about like all the things that we're talking about now, but how are you building? How does being mom, how does being a wife, how does all of that impact how you go to work and the conversations that you're having? But there are meetups all the time. It's a good group. So if you're a woman, if you're in partnerships, get on over there.
Yeah, we'll put a link in the show notes for sure.
Awesome.
Well, awesome. Sam, really appreciate you joining us. Like super insightful. And I think, you know, like I don't think we've had anyone on who has had the amount of success that you have in large partnership ecosystems and with some of probably the most frustrating logos out there that have definitely frustrated me in my past. So I appreciate the insight. Super productive. If you guys are just tuning in for the first time, please give us a subscribe. You'll get notified as we launch these on a weekly basis. And definitely hit up Sam Yarborough on LinkedIn. Check out Women in Partnerships and certainly check out Friends with Benefits, awesome partnership focused podcast out there that I actually did an episode on. So definitely check that out.
That's true. Drop that.
I'm sure the most interesting one. Yes.
Thank you so much, Sam.
Good to see you both. Thank you all.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And that is it for this episode of The Cheat Code. We will see you next week.
Growth requires more than capital.
Why do we call it the cheat code? Nobody said growth had to be fair.
Revenue solves everything.
Welcome to the cheat code. What was our fastest path to revenue?
We tend to like to do things the hard way.
What's the cheat code? It's giving yourself an unfair advantage over the others.
What is it that really works, and how are we going to grow these organizations?
That's our cheat code.